the studios of Boise State Public Radio News, I'm Samantha Wright, filling in for Jemma Gaudette. It's Idaho Matters. Well, if there's a more controversial environmental subject than wolves in Idaho, we haven't found it yet. When wolves were reintroduced into the Gem State almost 30 years ago, there were two very distinct sides, the people who wanted them back and those who didn't. There was a lot of anger, prejudice, myths, truths, and above all, very strong feelings on both sides. And that's often made it feel like common ground can never be reached. Almost 20 years ago, Living with Wolves was formed to try and break down the myths around wolves. This nonprofit's mission is to build tolerance that can lead to coexistence between people and wolves sharing the same land. Here to tell us more is Garrick Dutcher, the Research and Program Director for Living with Wolves. Welcome to Idaho Matters.
Hello, Samantha. Thank you for the opportunity to speak with you today and for hosting this show for so many years. Thank you.
Nope.
So, and one thing I would like to just say is that hopefully the tolerance and coexistence can also lead to acceptance.
Oh, exactly. And that's a big part of what you do is education and information. Talk about Living with Wolves. How did this get started?
Well, we have a history in filmmaking, and back in the early 90s and through 1996, we had a enclosure in the area of Stanley up in the Sawtooths with a pack of wolves that we spent time with for 6 years and learning from them about their behavior, about their mostly their social nature, which is in many ways mirrors our own, and a lot of what we see in our dogs comes from wolves. They're genetically nearly identical. So that's a strong message of ours, is that, you know, we have wolves to thank for our dogs, and what we see in our dogs are what wolves share with each other.
So what are you hoping to do? What is the mission of Living with Wolves?
To smooth out the conflict, to assist in trying to, you know, bring a message to the public about wolves through research, through public education and outreach, currently through our museum, which has been open for about a year up in Ketchum, between the public library, the community library, and Atkinson's on 4th Street and the 4th Street and Walnut Building. Come visit us and learn something and ask us your questions. And we want to be there to inform you and help you understand more about wolves, and to take away some of the concerns and fears and validate, you know, what wolves are and where work needs to be done. For instance, the issue with livestock production, with sheep and cattle, that's been ongoing for really millennia. You know, way back at the dawn of pastoralism, we had herders, you know, and herders became gauchos and cowboys. And, you know, so we've had human presence with our domestic livestock all along. And that's the first line of defense from any native carnivore, any native predator. And that suite of tools has grown to then dogs helping with that work, to now a bunch of modern technology that also helps with reducing conflicts, which aren't all that common, but when they happen, that's it's a problem for that producer, and that producer, you know, should get some help to prevent those problems from happening.
Well, let's dive into that. We had a couple of bills from this year's Idaho legislature to try and compensate ranchers for animals that were killed by wolves. Let's talk about the bills and what they do.
So House Bill 592 is a nice step in the right direction for Idaho. It provides compensation based on, you know, the evidence of depredation, meaning the act of an attack on livestock. So that means the, you know, a carcass that then is confirmed to have been killed by wolves or any other carnivore predator. And then through that, the producer can file a claim for compensation. And that, I believe, will run through Idaho State Department of Agriculture with some consultation from the Office of Species Conservation in the governor's office. That bill also has a component for providing support for conflict mitigation. So that could be range riders, which are sort of a modern version of a human presence with a herd, or some of these tools such as fox lights, other types of flashing lights that mimic the presence of humans at night with a flashlight. They seem to be quite effective over time. We've seen a lot of success with those devices over the past decade, especially. And it's growing in popularity, and more demand for these products is out there. And, it's important to meet that demand and to provide these products and consultation and support to those who are overlapping with wolves and other carnivores.
Now, does this, when we talk about compensation to ranchers, when livestock is killed, I mean, Is this really help ranchers? I mean, when you lose a sheep or a calf, that's a lot of money. That can be a real strain for folks who are ranchers. Talk about how this helps.
Yes, it can. And so there's many things to touch on there, but one thing that's important to recognize about wolf biology is that, as we mentioned earlier, they are very social. So they operate as a unit, as a family, called a pack. And in order to be successful, a pack, based on research, needs about four in a hunting party, four adults, to secure an elk. That's the sort of the sweet number, at which point beyond that, they've got the same rate of success in securing their meal. Below that, the rate drops off. So when packs are stable and well-formed and operating, quite often, most of the time, by far, they stick to the native game. I'll get into the numbers with you on that in just a second. But when you begin to disrupt that pack by doing removals, by killing wolves, you can cause a pack to leave an area, to fall apart. There's research that supports and proves that as well. And so what you then have is, say, optimal wolf habitat, but void of wolves. And so what comes back is often going to be a single wolf, a disperser, or perhaps a pair. And that pair or that single wolf is going to be a lot less equipped to pursue its primary choice of prey, which is elk in our area. And so, that's a much less stable wolf system than a healthy pack living, throughout wherever they succeed in Idaho, which, with so much public lands, they do really well on public lands, but we have a lot of public lands grazing in Idaho. So really for the ranchers, using these deterrents and trying to do conflict mitigation really can lead to a more peaceful environment for both wolves and livestock because it's stable.
And you've mentioned these deterrents, and there have been, I mean, over time, we've been trying non-lethal deterrents, a lot of studies, a lot of different things. You mentioned new things, high-tech things. Do these work? Do ranchers find them useful? Is this more effective than, going out and shooting the wolf?
Well, it's working because we are seeing increased demand. So the U.S. Congress passed the Wildlife Service's Non-Lethal Initiative several years ago, and based on demand, that funding has increased dramatically. And through Wildlife Services in Idaho, based on demand, now there is more funding going into non-lethal than there is into lethal management of wolves, because the number of attacks on livestock have gone down for 6 years in a row now. In fact, last year, the number of total confirmed depredations on cows or cattle and sheep was 85 dead cattle and sheep, 62 dead sheep, and 23 dead cows and calves, according to livestock death investigations conducted by wildlife services. That amounts to one in every 3,800 sheep. And if we were to take dairy cattle out of the equation and look at only beef cattle, we probably have about a million beef cattle in Idaho, and that would equate to about one in every 43,500 cows last year.
Interesting. Okay, so we've talked about a little bit about non-lethal deterrence, but
let me just put one more thing up.
Yeah,
you said, and you're right about this, but if you're at that person who lost a few sheep or, you know, a calf or a few calves in a night, that's an impact. And it's also unsettling.
Yeah.
And that deserves attention and that deserves compassion.
And that's where we try to find, you know, common ground if we can, which can be hard. It can. Let's talk about, it is legal to kill wolves in Idaho. And I was going to ask, is there a bounty for killing wolves in Idaho? Because I saw something about that and thought, well, I'll ask you.
Yes, there is. It's being labeled as reimbursement for expenses, but the payouts are always round figures, up to $2,000. And they really most often are either $1,500 or $2,000. And it's endorsed and supported by Idaho Fish and Game, which, from my perspective and many others, does not really resemble sound science-based wildlife management to provide a bounty for the sole purpose of driving down a population of wolves, which isn't that large. Again, we have 235,000 sheep in Idaho, 2,550,000 head of cattle, and probably around 1,000 wolves. If we go by Idaho Fish and Game's numbers, their last population count from the 2022 estimate was 1,337. I am anticipating when we hear about the next population estimate in about a month from now that we will have seen another drop much closer to 1,000 based on what their information gathering is suggesting. I'm guessing at that. But we are in a downward trajectory, and the methods of killing wolves have been stepped up greatly.
And when you talk about a bounty, that's for any wolf, right? That could be a single wolf, mothers, pups, whatever.
We have seen pups and, you know, pregnant females turned in for collection on fetuses. We've seen lots of pups killed before they even emerge from a den for the collection of bounties. These things do occur, and Idaho's public should be aware of that.
So, I mean, that can be, that information can also spark a lot of feelings, just like a rancher who has a depredation problem. How do you find common ground between these two sides?
Well, when it comes to the foundations that's paying out these bounties, they're claiming that they're doing so in order to help elk. And I want to point out that the previous 9 years were the longest streak of elk hunting harvest above 20,000 elk, meaning. And harvest is the term that Fish and Game uses for the hunter take of an animal. And so that was considered the second golden era. There was one other period that long where that many elk were successfully taken by hunters. And at the same time, we also had what was considered to be basically in line with the previous all-time record population of elk in the state, according to Idaho Fish and Game's communications department. And that's somewhere over 120,000 elk in the state. So to persecute wolves in the interest of growing elk for hunting also doesn't feel like sound wildlife management. But I do want to give credit to Fish and Game for good work that they've done in the Lolo, an area that has been under elk management objectives since the 1990s, But recently they conducted a habitat carrying capacity survey, sort of research project, where they had determined that the carrying capacity of that area should be dropped by, I think, as much as 75% for the elk population objective. And that is in consequence due to dramatic shifts in the habitat. In the 19-teens, 1910, around there, was the Great Burn. It burned off all the forest, created optimal elk forage through lush meadows and grasses. And that slowly grew back, and the canopy closed in and the grasses died, and the carrying capacity of that region dropped dramatically. It just took a while for fish and game to look at the system and determine that the objective was too high. So I really commend fish and game for looking at that and making that adjustment.
Well, we're just scratching the surface here of all of the topics and information that you at Living with Wolves works on and educates about. We got about a minute left. Talk about you mentioned it, the Living with Wolves Museum in Ketchum. Beautiful exhibits and photos. Tell us about it, and can anybody come and see it?
Yes, absolutely. Tuesday through Saturday, 11 to 4 are our current hours. And there are photographs and videos from our time with the Sawtooth Pack. And then the captions are, you know, speaking to issues that face wolves, the topic with ranchers and with native game, native prey. And all of those things are covered in the captions on the walls. And then we have a great staff there that can answer questions. And it's just a great opportunity. We hold a lot of field trips there for students. It's just a great opportunity to learn about wolves and to, you know, come ask us your questions. We welcome anyone.
Garrick, I want to thank you for coming on and telling us a little bit about the state of wolves in Idaho.
My pleasure. I thank you for having us.
Thanks for listening to Idaho Matters. Boise State Public Radio and Idaho Matters are members of the NPR network. It's an independent coalition of public media podcasters. You can find more shows in the network wherever you get your podcasts. I'm Samantha Wright. We'll see you tomorrow.
I'm Rachel Martin. You probably know how interview podcasts with famous people usually go. There's a host, a guest, and a light Q&A. But on Wildcard, we have ripped up the typical script. It's a new podcast from NPR where I invite actors, artists, and comedians to play a game using a special deck of cards to talk about some of life's biggest questions. Listen to Wildcard wherever you get your podcasts, only from NPR.